During the reign of Emperor Nero, the first Jewish-Roman War took place around 70 AD and was the first of three major rebellions by the Jews against the Roman Empire fought in Roman-controlled Judea, which was southern Palestine or modern Israel. The result was the destruction of the Jewish towns, the displacement of its people, with an estimated one-third perishing, the appropriation of land for use by the Roman military, and of course, the destruction of the Jewish temple, also known as Herod's Temple, which was constructed in 516 BC. It replaced Solomon's Temple, so it was called the Second Temple, as the first one was destroyed during the Babylonian siege of Jerusalem in 587 BC. Construction of the Second Temple began following a proclamation by Persian King Cyrus through his edict that ended the Babylonian captivity and initiated the return of the Jewish captives to Zion, which means they were freed and were permitted to return to Jerusalem as a self-governing province under the Persian Empire. King Herod, who the Second Temple was named after, ruled Jerusalem from 37 BC to 4 BC as a vassal king for the Roman Empire, having been appointed King of the Jews by the Roman Senate. Herod the Great was known as a tyrant, mostly because of his campaign to kill anyone who would claim the throne. Herod also created a new line of nobility and appointed new high priests not connected to the past dynasty, which I will discuss a little later. King Herod was raised as a Jew, but by descent was an Edomite, part of a demographic that was converted to Judaism around the 2nd century BC. Edom in Hebrew means red, and from a biblical perspective are considered descendants of Esau, the elder son of the patriarch Isaac, because he was born, quote, red all over. Some scholars consider the Edomites as Arab, which is considered a cultural and linguistic term and not a race, anthropologically speaking. But if we were to consider that the Prophet Muhammad as being Arab, we should also take into account that most major mosques in the world display his red hair and beard, as he was said to have been a ginger. That said, after the Jewish-Roman Wars, the Edomite Jews disappeared from written history, but not from the occult history passed down through secret societies, which is where we will pick up in today's presentation. Before their conversion to Judaism, the Edomites worshipped a thunderbolt-wielding deity, considered a storm god, which is depicted here from a cave in Israel, and is the equivalent of the god Yahweh. Keep in mind that, in antiquity, the sky god was considered male, but many anthropologists leave out the part that the earth is considered the female counterpart or goddess. So, when the weather god makes it rain, it is interpreted as fertilizing the earth, which then produces flowers and fruits and crops. So the sky and earth are actually part of a male and female whole. This brings us to the 24 elders of Revelation mentioned in the Bible, which says, quote, surrounding the throne were 24 other thrones, and seated on them were 24 elders. They were dressed in white and had crowns of gold on their heads. The identity of these elders is debatable, with certain secret societies claiming that their descendants derive from these elders, who escaped into Europe after the Second Temple was sacked by Rome. Before leaving their homeland, these elders had hidden their temple treasures and priceless Essene and Kabbalistic scrolls in strategic regions of the Holy Land so that the Roman invaders could not plunder them as spoils of war. The Jewish elders then immigrated north, where many of them allegedly married into the European continent's noble families, becoming royalty. Offspring of these elders would become the patriarchs of a group of European families known as the Rex Deus, or Star Families. Rex Deus is a Latin term that translates into God Kings, which speaks to their belief in bloodlines that descend from Mary Magdalene and, before that, from the fallen angels, or antediluvian sons of God, which some even trace back to the time of Atlantis. For 1,000 years, the secret location of the Jewish treasures filtered down by word of mouth through the families of the elders until the First Crusades, when knighted members of the Rex Deus marched into Jerusalem with the dual goal of defeating the Muslims for Christianity and recovering their family treasure, which may have included gold, but more importantly, included ancient occult knowledge, generically referred to as Kabbalah or Gnostic magic. These ancient secrets were brought back into Europe by the Knights Templar, whose name is derived from the Temple of Jerusalem, from which they claim ancestry from, and this esoteric knowledge eventually found its way into Sinclair Castle in Rosslyn, near Edinburgh, after escaping from France in 1307. The Sinclairs were one of the Rex Deus, or Star Families, connected to the Templars. After a major fire broke out in the castle, the Templar secret alchemical documents were moved to nearby Rosslyn Chapel, which some have claimed was built as a copy of Solomon's Temple, or Herod's later temple, which is why it seems to have an unfinished outer wall, allegedly resembling the appearance of Herod's temple when the Templars excavated it. These Gnostic practices were considered heretical by the church, so were guarded by alchemists who disguised spiritual tantric techniques of energetic transmutation by outwardly stating that they were transmuting lead to gold. The Rosicrucians and later the Freemasons inherited the secrets of Gnosis, which means knowledge, but not intellectual knowledge, the kind that comes from inside, an internal wisdom, which is where the term philosophy comes from. Philo means love, and Sophia is wisdom. So philosophy means the love of wisdom, or Gnosis. The Templars were accused of worshipping Baphomet, which is a word that can only be understood after applying the Atbash cipher. As early as 500 BC, scribes writing the book of Jeremiah used this cipher in Hebrew, which replaces the first letter of the alphabet, which is substituted for the last, the second letter for the second to the last, and so on. This cipher was applied to the Dead Sea Scrolls and many others, and when applied to the word Baphomet, it reveals the Greek word Sophia, considered the goddess, the bride of God, and of course, translates to wisdom. It has been held by many that the Templars were followers of the goddess, or at the very least in reestablishing the feminine aspect of divinity that had been excised by the church, which is why their cathedrals revered the Mary and held depictions of the Black Madonna, which has nothing to do with race or skin color, but is symbolic of the sacred mysteries, which I covered recently in my video about the Black Sun or Saturn worship. The idea that this Edomite or red occult Jewish lineage is at the root of the Templars, which use the Red Cross as its emblem, it's controversial, but becomes visible once one examines the symbolism. such as the churches in Lalibela, Ethiopia, that are not only adorned with swastika symbols, which predate Christianity and are symbolic of a more ancient esoteric philosophy disseminated globally by the Phoenicians, a word that comes from phoinos, meaning red in Greek, but also we find the Templar cross encased in the Seal of Solomon, which now flies on the flag of modern Israel as the Star of David, a nation which was established in no small part due to the patronage of the Rothschild family, a banking dynasty, which means red shield, which also prominently displays the same esoteric star, which does not appear anywhere in the Torah and whose origins has yet to be effectively explained by any mainstream Orthodox rabbis.
Today we're going to be giving a little bit of history and insight into the Star of David symbol. It's known in Hebrew as the Magen David, which literally means the shield of David. And the truth is that the interlocking symmetrical triangle was a common symbol in the East, in the ancient world. The hexagram also was very common in Shinto belief in Japan and an astrological figure in Persia. The history of the Star of David itself, nobody's really quite sure where it originated or how it became like such a prominent identifiable symbol with Judaism.
Most of us realize this is one of the most widely recognized symbols in all of Jewish culture. And what we want to look at tonight is the origins of such a symbol and where it might come from. Unfortunately, there isn't any real direct reference to the Jewish star, or the Magen David, in any of our biblical literature or Talmudic literature, even in our Kabbalistic and Midrashic literature. And even the famous Jewish philosopher and academic Gershom Scholem, who passed away in 1982, was a scholar who insisted that the Magen David was not a Jewish symbol at all. And he refused to accept the idea that there was any connection between the Star of David, the Magen David, and Judaism to speak of.
I gave a talk in about Roslyn Chapel here in London in 1994. And I announced at that talk that I was going to Jerusalem and I hoped to get permission to go into the tunnels under the Temple Mount. And after the talk, I was approached by a gentleman called Michael, an elderly Englishman, who told me to look out for certain carved signs and symbols in the tunnels. And I said, well, how do you know about this? And he said, rather startlingly, that he was a direct descendant of Hugh de Payen, one of the founders and the first Grand Master of the Knights Templar. I later was able to substantiate his claims. And he told me a story that European nobility and royal families had been permeated by a series of bloodlines who claimed descent from the 24 high priests of the Temple of Jerusalem, and that these people had preserved a totally different version of the teachings of Jesus to that put out by the Catholic Church and the later Christian churches who sprang from that. A story that said Jesus did not come to die on the cross to redeem us from sin, but to reveal a spiritual pathway of initiation leading to sacred knowledge or gnosis, a stream of Gnosticism that, if the story were true, could be traced back not merely to Israel, but back to Egypt. And it is an initiatory teaching of Gnosticism, which, of course, Holy Mother the Church regards as outright heresy.
So there is a bloodline?
Yes, oh, very definitely. There is a bloodline, and there is a bloodline within the bloodline. Within the wider group of the Rex Deus families, there is also a group known as the Desposini, who are the descendants of the Master, the man known as Jesus the Nazarene. Not Jesus of Nazareth, because Nazareth didn't actually exist at the time of Jesus. The Nazareans were an initiatory sect, an offshoot of the Essenes, and Jesus was one of their principal teachers.
The Aryan race is based, it's a concept, it's a Kabbalistic concept, despite the fact that it's perceived as white supremacist. It's basically rooted in Scottish Rite Freemasonry. That seems to be what the underlying core is. So it seems that all these various branches emerge out of Scottish Rite Freemasonry. So Scottish Rite Freemasonry, the basis of its ideology is this concept of the Asian Kabbalah. So it's the idea that the Kabbalah didn't originate amongst the Jews. It originated before them, long before them, amongst the Aryans. And the Aryans lived on Atlantis, where they interbred with the sons of God of the Bible, or ancient aliens, as they're known popularly right now, extraterrestrials. Yeah. And they interbred with them and created a race, a superior race known as the Aryans. And to them, they taught the so-called ancient wisdom. When this is supposed to have taken place at the time of Genesis, the time of the flood. So the sinking of Atlantis is supposed to be the flood. The Aryans escape, land in the mountains of Asia, and from there they spread to various parts of the world, and they spread their ancient wisdom. When you look at especially right up until modern times, you look at the history of the Kabbalah, it's based on the belief that the sons of God, or the Anunnaki, the Anakim, were offspring of the sons of God and human beings. And so that this superior race, they're called in the Zohar, they're called, in fact, in the Bible, they're called the mixed multitude. And it's the Zohar that associates them with the sons of God. And so this mixed multitude is the Aryan race. So as paradoxical as it might seem, the whole concept of the Aryan race is actually a Kabbalistic myth of Jewish, you know, occult Jewish supremacy. And so it's the belief that they are semi-divine because they are offspring of the fallen angels.
And on the Christian side, these would be the i.e. sons of God, the descendants of these i.e. spirits and humans, right?
Yeah. And okay. More than that, it's basically the fundamental Kabbalistic belief is that the sons of God created a race of superior humans who have been preserving the ancient wisdom ever since. Albert Pike was a proponent of Aryan theories. He later became a member of the Theosophical Society, which of course was headed by Blavatsky, who was the most recent proponent or, you know, elaborator of the Aryan myth, the mythology that the Aryans are survivors of Atlantis, who originally descendants of the sons of God, Anakim Anunnaki, who had preserved the ancient wisdom, quote unquote, Kabbalah, since that time.
And this went through, of course, through Judah, the tribe of Judah, and through the various prophets and so forth, right?
Well, this is where it gets strange, because this is where you have a simultaneously contradicting history, right? Like, really what happened is that when the lost tribes get scattered, they get scattered to the land of the Medes and all the way into Central Asia. And that's where supposedly they intermarry with the Scythians. And that's where they become the lost tribes, become the Turks. They eventually migrate to Europe, where they become Scandinavians and Scots.
Sure. And then you had the Picts and the Celts and so forth.
The Scandinavians, descendants of Odin, and the Vikings and the Scots, particularly in Isle of Orkney, which is where the Sinclairs come from, and that's where you get this heritage of Scottish Rite Freemasonry. The descendants of the Anakim become the Canaanites.
Sure, and of course we know the Canaanites are very industrious, right? They would bring business and trading all around the world through their boats and so forth.
Phoenicians, yeah.
Phoenicians, correct.
It's the lost tribes who are, you know, among the Scythians that are considered really the descendants or the Aryans, the source of the Aryan people. So you have the simultaneous history, which is weird. Why? Basically, you've got, you know, it's a Jewish esoteric mythology which produced the Aryan race. So you have this dual path of, you know, this like legitimate Jewish descent, simultaneously this competing, opposing Aryan descent. But they seem to feed the same thoughts.
Brothers or cousins, right? And then they're both masters of the horse, you know? Yeah. And they literally conquered the world on the horse.
Of course, the Templars were not the only sect whose name indicated a relationship to the temple in Jerusalem, as the German Temple Society. The Temple Society is a German Protestant sect with roots in the Pietist movement of the Lutheran Church. Pietism is a movement that combines biblical doctrine with a Reformed emphasis on individual piety. Their members refer to themselves as Templars. Although the movement started exclusively within Lutheranism, it had a tremendous impact on Protestantism worldwide, spreading first to Switzerland, Scandinavia, and the Baltics, and the rest of Europe, then taken to North America, primarily by German and Scandinavian immigrants. There, it influenced Protestants of other ethnic backgrounds, contributing to the 18th century foundation of evangelicalism, a movement within Protestantism that today has some 300 million followers. The Templars were expelled from the Lutheran Church in 1858 because of their millennial beliefs. Millennialism is a word that comes from the Latin millenniarus, which means containing a thousand, and is the belief of a coming transformation of society after which all things will be changed, usually coming about after major cataclysms or other apocalyptical events. The word Templar is derived from concepts in the Bible, where every person and the community are seen as temples in which God's Spirit dwells. The Temple Society was founded by two men, Christoph Hoffmann, who was chairman of a German congregation of the Moravian Church, also called the Unitas Fratrum, Latin for Unity of the Brethren, one of the oldest Protestant denominations in the world, dating back to the Bohemian Reformation of the 15th century, founded in the Kingdom of Bohemia. The other was George David Hardegg, who in 1868 purchased land at the foot of Mount Carmel, a coastal mountain range in northern Israel stretching from the Mediterranean Sea towards the southeast, where Israel's third largest city called Haifa is located. At the time, Haifa had a population of 4,000 Arabs, and the Templars are credited today with the development of the city, with religious colonies spreading congregations to Jaffa, Jerusalem, and Sirona, where they established a regular coach service between Haifa and other cities, promoting tourism, making important contributions to road construction, and establishing a lot of agriculture. For example, the colony's oranges were the first to carry the Jaffa Orange brand, one of the better known agricultural brands in Europe, used to market Israeli oranges to this day. Their aim was to promote spiritual cooperation to advance the rebuilding of the temple in the Holy Land, then called Palestine, in the belief that this foundation will promote the second coming of Christ. In 1898, Kaiser Wilhelm II of Germany visited the colonies and initiated the formation of a society for the advancement of the German settlements in Palestine, enabling the settlers to acquire land for new settlements by offering them low-interest loans. Waves of pioneer settlers followed in 1902, 1903, 1906, and 1907, with Templar communities in what was then called Palestine now numbering in the thousands. The houses they built can still be seen in Haifa and on part of what is now called Ben-Gurion Boulevard. There's been a growing interest in Israel about these German settlers, and an exhibition about them was organized in Tel Aviv back in 2006, where they are acknowledged as being the first to develop the land in modern times, and the government recognizes the contributions they made to things like early infrastructure,
and were considered a millennialist group, which expected a thousand-year reign following the second coming of Christ. Elements of this can also be seen in nationalist Germany, where the German chancellor was seen as a messianic figure or savior by his inner circle, and would publicly proclaim his intentions of establishing a thousand-year Reich, which means kingdom or empire. The German nationalists, and particularly the SS, were steeped in occult philosophy and were not atheists, but similar to an esoteric religious order. After nationalist Germany's unsuccessful attempt to implement a thousand-year reign, the Vatican issued an official statement that millennial claims could not be safely taught and that the related biblical scriptures in Revelation, also called the Apocalypse, should only be understood spiritually. This line of thought, however, still exists, being much more common than most people are aware of, and is also mirrored in other spiritual movements. For example, the Baha'i faith that maintains that it expects a renewal of the city of God every thousand years. Jehovah's Witnesses believe that Christ will return and will rule from heaven for a thousand years as king over earth. The Theosophist Alice Bailey taught that a messianic figure would return sometime after the year 2025, and that this would be the New Age equivalent of the Christian concept of the second coming of Christ. There are more examples of millennialism linked to modern political movements that claim to be attempts to fulfill biblical prophecy, but they fall outside of the scope of this presentation. In closing, I'd like to read from a chapter from the book titled Morals and Dogma by 33rd degree Freemason Albert Pike. The occult science of the ancient magi was concealed under the shadows of the ancient mysteries. It was imperfectly revealed, or rather disfigured, by the Gnostics. It is guessed at under the obscurities that cover the pretended crimes of the Templars, and it is found enveloped in enigmas and seemed impenetrable in the rites of the highest masonry. Magism was the science of Abraham and Orpheus, of Confucius and Zoroaster. It is the dogmas of this science that were engraved on the tables of stone by Enoch and Trismegistus. Moses purified and reveiled them, for that is the meaning of the word reveal. He covered them with a new veil when he made of the Holy Kabbalah the exclusive heritage of the people of Israel and the inviolable secret of its priests. The mysteries of Thebes and Eleusis preserved among the nations some symbols of it, already altered, and the mysterious key whereof was lost among the instruments of an ever-growing superstition. Jerusalem, the murderers of her prophets, and so often prostituted to the false gods of the Syrians and Babylonians, had at length in its turn lost the holy word. When a prophet announced to the Magi by the consecrated star of initiation, came to rend sunder the worn veil of an old temple in order to give the church a new tissue of legends and symbols, and still and ever conceals from the profane and ever preserves to the elect of the same truths. It was the remembrance of this scientific and religious absolute, of this doctrine that is summed up in a word, of this word, in fine, alternately lost and found again, that was transmitted to the elect of all the ancient initiations. It was this same remembrance, preserved or perhaps profaned in the celebrated Order of the Templars, that became for all the secret associations of the Rosy Cross, of the Illuminati, of the Hermetic Freemasons, the reason of their strange rites and of their signs, more or less conventional, and above all, of their mutual devotedness and of their power. The Gnostics caused the Gnosis to be prescribed by the Christians, and the official sanctuary was closed against the high initiate. The Hermetic science of the early Christian ages, cultivated also by the Arabs, studied by the chiefs of the Templars, and embodied in certain symbols of the higher degrees of Freemasonry, may be accurately defined as the Kabbalah in active realization, or the magic of works. The primary tradition of the single revelation has been preserved under the name of Kabbalah by the priesthood of Israel. The Kabbalistic doctrine, which was also the dogma of the Magi and of Hermes, is contained in the Sefer Yetzirah and the Zohar. Magic is that which it is. It is by itself, like the mathematics, for it is the exact and absolute science of nature and its laws. Magic is the science of the ancient magi, Tradition also gives these magi the title of kings, because initiation into magism constitutes a genuine royalty, and because the grand art of the magi is styled by all the adepts the royal art of the noble Aryans. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again.